Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch brings you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Monday Night Raw.
So, Greg, did they get fans excited about seeing and cheering on Logan Paul beating Miz? Or did it seem like Miz closed with basically a babyface promo for a celebrity overstepping their bounds and coming into this world thinking that they can own the place? I was a little confused by the end, but it seemed to me like Logan Paul still has a ways to go before he can win over the WWE fan base. What was your take on that?
They tried. They tried to make Logan Paul the babyface that he apparently wants to be in WWE. And I think I saw some glimpses in his promo to where he could be an effective babyface on the mic. It's just that he's just so far behind the eight ball with the fans. You know, whether it's they know him from social media and they don't like him, or they see him as this outsider who's been hobnobbing with The Miz and they don't like him. Whatever the case may be, the fans just don't like him. And they still have an uphill battle. I thought they did what they could. And, you know, it's so hard to tell with WWE sweetening the crowd now so much, even on these live shows. You never know what the true reaction is unless we get someone who was there live and is able to tell us what the live crowd thought of Logan Paul. But, you know, I think there is something there in him to be a babyface. I thought the line about, you know, all of the social media attention and stuff like that that he got, I thought that was a swing and a miss for a babyface line, because no one, you know, no one cares about that. Babyfaces, I don't think that's something that in the world of, that's something The Miz cares about. You know, The Miz is a heel. And so I know that Logan Paul is probably very proud of that, and it's something that he's worked hard to attain. But I don't think in the world of WWE, the fan base that's there, that's something that the baby faces him to them. So I thought that was the swing and a miss line. But I thought he showed good babyface fire on the mic. I thought WWE tried by putting him against someone so unlikable as The Miz can be as a character. And so they only have another week, and we'll see what they do. But, I didn't think it was – this is going to be a long-term thing to get him to turn babyface. And this was really in front of a live crowd anyway, week one in trying to do that. So I don't want to give a pass-fail grade because it is week one, but they took some steps in that direction, and I think Logan Paul's performance took some steps in that direction to turn him babyface. But there's still a ways to go.
I think a couple things that didn't work is I thought that Logan Paul came across as desperate, like desperate to be cheered. I think fans can smell that. I think they can sense that. And, you know, just like a rock band trying to play a song that they might otherwise go to a concert to see, but they're going to boo it during a wrestling event, just like the, you know, whole era of Raw guest celebrity GMs where a lot of those celebrities got booed and seemed a little thrown off. You really do have to prove yourself to fans that you're not just there to promote something or, in the case of Logan Paul, live out some celebrity fantasy camp. And I think fans see it as that. And when Logan goes, well, people said I couldn't build a social media empire, but I did. It's like, okay, yeah, exactly. Off to a bad start there. That's not going to get anyone to cheer him. People will have their opinions about, oh, well, good, you know, good for him for succeeding in social media, but that doesn't mean we should like you in a WWE environment. And then he's like, and then I went, worked really hard to prove myself out of respect for pro wrestling at WrestleMania. And it's a good point, but he can't be the one saying it. Mm-hmm. Because now it's not he respects pro wrestling. It's he wants to get over so badly with the fans that he worked hard, and now he's saying he did it out of respect for pro wrestling. It just rings the sort of throwing his shoulder out to pat himself on the back as a way to protest fans not just instantly liking and embracing him because he wants to be cheered. So, yeah, I don't strong opinions on Logan Paul, period. Like, I just don't – I haven't followed him a lot. But I can watch – but, I mean, I'm, you know, I have peripheral knowledge. But like I said, I mean, there's parts of, his entrepreneurial success. It's like, oh, good for him and other things. And it's just like, you know, I don't know, whatever. That doesn't even matter. That's not my point. My point is I think a lot of WWE fans are know more about him and don't like him, or know more about him even than I do and don't think he belongs in WWE, regardless of how they feel otherwise. Or three, just are kind of like me. They just don't have a really strong opinion on him, and they see him as this, you know, outsider coming in and wanting to kind of live out this fantasy camp. And when you're – it's hard to be a celebrity coming into WWE and not come across as an interloper. And I think Miz, as unlikable, Greg, as you point out he was once that interloper, and he spent years fighting that off. And JBL made him pay a price behind the scenes in shameful ways, and others did. But now he sort of is not only someone who actually has proven himself to fans to a degree. He's still, you know, the king of soft style. He's still, you know, the corporate guy willing to make every appearance, as we saw again on tonight's show, and sort of, you know, a corporate suck up and all that. But compared to Logan Paul, I think people would want to cheer him. Plus, I think people sort of like Miz and Maryse based on their reality show. The slice of the audience that's watching it, I don't think that makes them dislike Miz more. I think it makes them see Miz as doing a shtick on WWE TV, but they kind of respect and like him, or at least see him as a relatively neutral, nice guy, not a jerk. So as much as you point out, I think WWE thinks Miz is unlikable and the right person to put against him, and Miz is doing everything he can to get Logan Paul cheered. It's weird, but it actually could backfire, because Miz is out there showing a more real version of himself, as much as you're a real version of yourself on reality TV. And he's somebody who was once Logan Paul and then paid his dues the hard way by going on the road full time, working house shows, not being treated as a celebrity. Granted, Logan is more of a celebrity than Miz coming in, although Real World had a ton of viewers relative to today's average TV viewership for shows. I think fans look at him and go, well, Logan, you know what? Why don't you go to the Performance Center? Why don't you work in NXT for 2 years? Why don't you do 3 years of a WWE house show circuit and then talk to us about getting a big slot at SummerSlam? Don't tell us you worked hard for a couple of months training for WrestleMania. That doesn't offset the celebrity advantage that you've been given, the running to the front of the line, but standing third and not first, and then claiming, I waited behind three people or two people, that's why you should cheer me. He didn't even wait behind two people. He just worked really hard to get to the front of the line ahead of everybody else. So it is a losing battle unless you're just really, really likable and can overcome that. And Logan isn't. So yeah, that's my take watching this. Now, maybe all of this doesn't matter a ton. WWE might know it's an uphill battle. They just want to create buzz. They want people like us talking like we are for 5-10 minutes about this at the top of a podcast, because it makes SummerSlam feel special and controversial. Anything you want to react to there, Greg?
Well, I think the other thing you want to add into this is the bar for celebrity wrestling matches all of a sudden is pretty high. You know, with Bad Bunny and with Pat McAfee coming into WWE and just blowing the doors off and beating expectations, you know, Logan Paul did well at WrestleMania.
Yeah.
You know, but if this is a singles match against The Miz, we've seen where The Miz is not, you know, he's an awkward guy, you know, and if you have a celebrity in there, you'd probably prefer to have them in there with someone who's more athletic than The Miz, who can bump around a little better and just be generally more athletic in being the opponent for someone like Logan Paul. So, you know, the thing going for him is that he did very well at WrestleMania, but, you know, on the flip side of that, the bar stands really high, and you have Pat McAfee, who is also going to be wrestling at SummerSlam, and there are bound to be comparisons between Pat McAfee's match, granted, against Baron Corbin, so it's not somebody who's you know, significantly more athletic as an in-ring competitor than The Miz, and Logan Paul. There are going to be comparisons between those two matches, and it'll be really interesting to see who does the better job, or who is perceived by fans as doing the better job in their match, Pat McAfee or Logan Paul.
Okay, let's pause and introduce the show, and then we will get the phone calls and emails and an on-site correspondent, Greg. Scott from Tampa, who will tell us what the reaction was in the building of Logan Paul and everything else that happened on tonight's episode. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Monday, July 18th, 2022. I'm Wade Keller, joined by longtime Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Greg Parks. He is also the host of the PW Torch Daily Cast Sunday night show titled Wrestling Night in America. Greg, welcome to the co-host chair.
Great to be here, Wade. Thanks for inviting me.
It's always good to have you on. It's rare that we get you on a post show. Sometimes we do the flagship over on the Blue Logo Show together, but it's always a good time when we do a podcast together. And covering Raw tonight should be fun with everything that we've got coming up to talk about and the interaction with callers, emailers, and our on-site correspondent. But first, Greg, tell people what is downloadable this very second on the free PW Torch Daily Cast podcast feed, which, by the way, features a different show with different hosts every day of the week for free, with shows dedicated to NXT, the pro wrestling indie scene, MMA talk for pro wrestling fans, the PW Torch 90s past cast, and others. So, Greg, tell people about the format of Wrestling Night in America.
So just last night, we had Tyler Sage on, PWTorch.com contributor, and I'm joined by a co-host from the PW Torch family each and every week, Sundays at 8 p.m. You can listen live. You can call in live. You can email us anytime. We talk about the big shows in pro wrestling. So when I had Tyler on last night, we talked about the upcoming Death Before Dishonor pay-per-view, the ROH pay-per-view that's happening next Saturday night. We talked about the G1 tournament so far. We're two nights into the G1, so we talked about our impressions of that as well. And we took some calls and emails on a variety of subjects. So next Sunday night, we'll be live, 8 p.m. Eastern again. We'll be breaking down the Death Before Dishonor card, talking about the results and where things stand and go from there. And we'll also be doing a full preview of the SummerSlam card, which will be happening the following weekend. So a lot of big shows coming up and a lot of things to talk about on Wrestling Night in America.
So everybody right now, pause this, or while you're listening, go to your podcast app and search PW Torch. And when you see the PW Torch Daily Cast logo pop up, click subscribe. And there's more shows that you can listen to every single day that if you haven't done that yet. And also while you're at it, you'll see the black logo show up, PW Torch VIP podcast feed. That includes free samples of our VIP shows throughout the month, but it also allows you to subscribe to all our VIP exclusive podcasts and get the ad-free and plug-free versions of the Wade Keller shows and the Daily Casts, all on your Apple iPhone within the native podcast app using your Apple account to subscribe. It's as frictionless and easy as ever to get all the VIP podcasts, and it just takes like however long it takes you to type PW Torch and subscribe. So do that if you haven't yet. If that interests you, we'd like you to give it a try. I think, Apple gives you a three-day, we actually authorize, but they give you three free days to try out the VIP feed so you can see what it's all about, and hopefully you'll let that roll over and support us through a subscription. But if not, at least you tried it, and hey, there's nothing to lose by giving it a try. So if you're on an Apple iPhone using their native podcast app, search PW Torch and subscribe to that black and gray logo in addition to the free Daily Cast logo, and upgrade to a full VIP membership. With so much coming up, including ROH pay-per-view coverage this weekend and SummerSlam the following weekend, and then we'll roll over into all the hype for AEW's big weekend coming up for All Out. So we are here, though, first to talk about Raw. And our phone number, if you want to join in the conversation, is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. When you call, push 1 on your keypad if you want to join the show. That won't instantly put you on the air. That just flags you on our switchboard so that we know you want to be on the air. It's like raising your hand. Otherwise, you can just call and listen in the background and decide as the show progresses. We'd love to hear from some first-time callers. We'd love to hear from some women in addition to men who dominate the caller population on this show. And we'd like to hear from some regulars we haven't heard from in a while who sometimes just listen into the show but don't participate, including, are you ready to cheer Logan Paul? Are you ready to cheer Logan Paul from your living room or at SummerSlam if you're attending? What would it take for Logan Paul to win you over if he hasn't yet? Or would you cheer Miz? And it's just going to happen. Or he's going to boo both. Like, maybe that's the option a lot of our listeners would choose. So let us know that. You can also email the show, wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. All right, let's go to phone calls. And we're going to begin with Justin in Charlotte, North Carolina. Justin, thanks for calling. What did you think of Raw tonight? What stood out?
Oh, so I thought the show was they're building towards the pay-per-view, so I thought the show overall completed this mission that they set out for. I didn't have a problem with the show. What did annoy me, and Wade, this is going back to the road to WrestleMania. Just want to talk about the women's division for a second. We're getting it again. We're getting another Bianca Belair-Becky Lynch match. And, you know, archive showed that I was tired of this feud going into WrestleMania. And what do you know? We're getting it again. And I'm very interested to see what the correspondent says, because I didn't really feel that the crowd was that into that Becky Lynch promo to start the show. And as they had the promo of Becky Lynch and Bianca, it was a groan-inducing for me, because it's like it just feels like we just seen this a few months ago. And when I look at the rest of the SummerSlam card, outside of what you guys talked about with the Logan Paul Miz thing, it just feels like WrestleMania meets Money in the Bank. It's like the bigger the show gets, it feels mm-hmm. like the more rematches or retreads we get in WWE for some reason. I felt a lot of people were complaining about WrestleMania with the same copy and paste. And now they're in this big stadium with 30,000 tickets sold, and I feel like you take WrestleMania Money in the Bank, that's basically what this pay-per-view is. I mean, maybe you guys are okay with the feud. Maybe you guys were sold on video package, but I know me personally, I just groaned during the promo and video package, because it's like we can't get anything new, like nothing new.
Well, we'll certainly be focusing on the SummerSlam lineup more on our podcasts in coming days, and certainly even more so obviously next week. But right now we've got 8 matches, 2 semi-celebrity matches with Logan Paul and Pat McAfee against Miz and Happy Corbin, respectively. And then we got the U.S. title match with Theory and Lashley, which they put a lot of effort into. They just announced Riddle against Seth Rollins is official. And they put a lot of effort and time into the Usos and the Street Profits, although they've made the Street Profits seem inferior and hapless against Omos. And I don't think that helps boost the prestige and marketability of the tag match and the tag titles if they're the best the tag division has to offer, and Omos can beat them both at once. But that's a separate conversation. And then you have the three major singles title matches, Roman against Lesnar, clear headline match with the Theory mystery being a big part of will he cash in, and will Reigns and Lesnar destroy each other and be easy pickings. And then you have Liv Morgan defending against Ronda Rousey and the underdog against the heavy favorite in Ronda. And then you have Bianca and Becky. That's how SummerSlam is shaping up right now. And Bianca and Becky, Greg, it's hard to know when I've run down all those matches where to place that match in terms of what is the main reason that people are going to be tuning in. If we just stipulate to Reigns Lesnar being number one, it does feel like a bit of an ensemble from there. Some people are really into Pat McAfee. Others are going to think Logan Paul misses the key celebrity match on SummerSlam, and that's the biggest match. Riddle is really over. Seth is a big star, and maybe that'll be number two on some people's list. And then you got Ronda Rousey, and then you got all the effort they put into the tag match. Is Bianca Becky standing out as like a clear number two or clear number three, or just one of many matches on the undercard that are interchangeable, Greg?
Yeah, I don't think it stands out. I think you could make the argument that Becky Bianca is number two just because of how deep the roots of this feud go, dating back last year to SummerSlam when Becky Lynch came back and beat Bianca Belair in 26 seconds. So I think the nice thing about this feud for me is it's been on again, off again. You know, they've met up at times, but they've also gone their separate way at times. So it hasn't felt like that overbearing to me for that reason. I'm really more tired of Bianca Belair and Carmella than Bianca Belair and Becky Lynch at this point. I guess I feel Becky Lynch is certainly more deserving of those opportunities than Carmella has been portrayed as being, despite her getting numerous opportunities, hopefully the last one being tonight in that match with Bianca Belair. But, you know, the bottom line to me when I look at this match is Becky Lynch and Bianca Belair are the clear number one and number two women on the Raw brand. Now, you can blame WWE Creative for that and say, well, that's their fault because they haven't built anyone else up to challenge these women for that number one and number two spot. Certainly Asuka could be in that conversation. She's sort of been on the periphery as a number three. But, you know, even if you did try to build someone up, just, you know, the character work, the overness, the experience at the top of the card that these two women have are going to pretty firmly entrench them as number one and number two. And I also think there is some intrigue as to who's going to come out of this match as the winner. Bianca Belair, I'm not really 100% convinced that she is going to retain. I think it's very possible that Becky Lynch could win the title. So I'm not sure that there are a lot of matches that go on pay-per-view anymore that you can say that about, especially high-level matches, that you can genuinely say, you know, this is a real toss-up in terms of who's going to walk out as champion. But I think this match you can say that about.
Before I throw back to you, Justin, I'll read an email on Bianca and Becky here also from Zach in Texas. He said, gentlemen, at least WWE was nice enough to open Raw with the women's title segment so I could watch the one thing I care about and be finished. That said, I can't bring myself to get excited about Becky and Bianca in a rematch. Becky's promo was typically good despite being performative heel shtick. Bianca was out there making train noises. That was certainly a choice. Another choice was building a match around a challenger trying to win a title by getting the champion counted out instead of actually beating her. Way to make Carmella look like a punk and Becky look a little punkish for trying to help Carmella. Ultimately, the SummerSlam match does little to help either party. Bianca beats Becky again, and Becky's still trudging along as a heel. It's been almost a year now. It's a failed experiment. It's time to move on and just let the crowd cheer Becky. So we also had in this the Carmella wins by countout. She wins the title. If she wins by countout, she wins the title. And it sort of was an afterthought, which he called out Bianca for. Hey, don't forget about me. Or called Becky out for, excuse me, don't forget about me. So anyway, there's some thoughts there. Justin, I'll throw back to you, and then Greg can respond to that email and anything else you have to say about this.
Yeah, so I basically agree with the email in a lot of ways. And even the match tonight, it's like, if you just put any logic to it, why wouldn't Becky help Carmella get Bianca Belair counted out so she could face a lesser opponent at the pay-per-view? Why would she want Bianca Belair to win that match? She helped her win the week before, but not helped her win this week when it's easier for her to go after the championship with a lesser opponent. So that really didn't even make any sense. I agree with a lot of things that Greg said, but it also goes into the hands of WWE when people say, oh, well, they're doing Roman Reigns and Brock Lesnar because that's the biggest match they can do. Well, it's like, because you kind of, you know, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. It's like, if you only build up two people, and you don't build anybody else up, then that's the circumstances you put yourself under. And, you know, we saw the entire Raw Women's Division in a 24-7 title, whatever that was. I don't want to call it a match because they had two pinfalls, so I don't really know what it was. But it's just there's on either side, but I guess the women are more – it's easier to look at the women because it's less of them. But I just feel like the bookings just really fell off. I felt like they carried the division for a while, but – losing Liv Morgan, putting Lacey Evans back on SmackDown, and then the absence of Rhea Ripley just really extend the roster and to do a match that we've already seen again. I just don't see who helps in this. You know, who does this match help other than placing the match on the card for the pay per view?
Greg, I'll throw to you for response to Justin and the email.
I think that the match that we saw tonight was complete and utter nonsense in terms of like Carmella being rewarded for, you know, by getting a match where she can win the title that normally does not occur. And then, you know, everything that the emailer and Justin mentioned about the match and the nonsense about it. I totally agree with that. You know, I think that, who, in terms of who does this match help, I think it continues to help Bianca Belair for sure, because yes, she's entrenched as the number one babyface, but I think it also helps to keep her there. You know, you got to remember, she's still relatively new to that spot. And so I think we're getting in that case where, you know, someone's been in the spot for a little while and we get tired of it and we're like, okay, who's next? Well, you know, Bianca's really good. She's earned that spot and she deserves being in that spot. And I think there's a certain restlessness that some wrestling fans have where as soon as someone gets entrenched in a position, we're looking for the next thing. And okay, who's next? Why are they still here? Why isn't someone else taking their spot? And you know, that 3 to 6 month rotation that people would like, I'm just not sure if that's really realistic. In terms of the Becky Lynch heel thing, I don't think it's a failure that some people believe it is. I think when she's put in there against a babyface the level of Bianca Belair, Becky Lynch will get booed. I think when she's put in there against lesser babyfaces, you know, there are people who will cheer Becky Lynch. So I was certainly not for turning her heel at the time, but I think she's become better as a heel and more received as a heel than some people are willing to give her credit for.
I thoroughly enjoy almost all of what Becky does as a heel. I think she's having fun. I think she's hoping that fans will boo her, and I think she's hoping that people who wish she were a babyface could see that she's kind of winking at them and saying, come on,
mm-hmm.
boo me, I'm having fun. And performative heel shtick, I don't agree with that. I think Damian Priest is doing performative heel shtick. I will, you know, talk a deep voice, I'm going to talk like this and accentuate accents in a different... It's like, that's performative. Becky is like, I think, delivering really entertaining content and showing a range of emotions. She's putting a ton of thought and effort into what she wears, her hairstyle. I look forward to seeing how she's going to present herself. And she presents herself in a way where, when I watch Damian Priest, I think, okay, he spent a good part of the afternoon trying to memorize and practice and rehearse his promo. When Becky shows up, I think it's the culmination of a week of her agonizing over what happened last week. And she's unleashing and sometimes unraveling before our very eyes as she vents. I'm buying into it more. I think there are people who genuinely miss Becky. And by the way, if they had a return as a babyface and she was the Becky we saw, you know, calling Ronda a little weirdo and, you know, all the great stuff she did as a babyface, I wouldn't be calling for her to go heel. But I don't think it's a case where, you know, you have to hate strawberries because you like blueberry, or, you know, you've got Sir Blueberries. It's like, well, I shouldn't bring that up after the whole Miz thing. Whatever, you know, if you like apples and bananas, you can do both. So anyway, I really didn't plan that, but I did catch myself in the middle of it. I just think Becky's heel performances deserve an acknowledgement. And you know what? It's my opinion. People can disagree and think it's performative shtick. I'm just making my case. I don't see it as that. When she comes out, I genuinely look forward to what her hair, her body language, her clothing, and what I feel is 7 days worth of pent up ranting from a person who's unraveling and living this life, not just performing it once a week.
I agree. I think she's done a fantastic job. And like I said, you know, it's taken me a little to come around on the idea of her as a heel, but what's really helped me is her performance. And she's just knocked it out of the park much better than I expected her to be able to. And, you know, that's what's finally led to me saying, okay, you know, because remember, it was a couple of years ago that WWE tried to turn her heel the first time, and the fans would not let them do it, and they had to turn her right back. And so when you saw her come back and beat Bianca Belair in 26 seconds at SummerSlam, it felt like, oh, we're going to do this again, and it's going to fail again. But Becky took a different tact with the heel character this time that helped it stick a lot better than it did the first time.
Justin, go ahead.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying, and I don't have an issue with these two performers separately. It's just them constantly feuding with each other, and they're trying to make this big thing like it all is culminating back to SummerSlam. Their match at SummerSlam last year was an impromptu match. It wasn't an actual match, and so as a fan, I just feel like you're trying to build me on, like, this is some match you guys have been building to, or it's naturally culminated, when I just feel like You don't have anything else, really. You really haven't put yourself in the situation to give us anything different. So this is what you're giving us. And I know the video package was designed to make me excited about the match, but all it did was make me think, like, really? You think you could just throw in a two or three minute video package, get me sold on a match that I really was kind of not sold on at WrestleMania, but I bought into the idea that the babyface had to get their revenge. And I actually just disagree with Bianca getting anything from beating Becky Lynch. I mean, how can you get bigger than, you know, WrestleMania? I mean, this is just – I mean, where does she go from here, either character? I mean, if Bianca wins, okay, she beat Becky at Mania. If Becky wins, what was the point of this Bianca Belair title? And I just feel like it's just a match. I don't really feel like it ups anyone's stock. It's just a match.
Very good. Justin, is there anything else you want to add to the conversation?
Yeah, Austin Theory. My Austin Theory meter has been going up in recent weeks. You know, I still think the selfie thing just needs to go away. It's not a main event gimmick. I understand that there's some people that think it is. They think it's timely with the whole social media thing. I don't think it's a main event gimmick. Putting that aside, I just think he's been doing good work, you know. I'm shocked that there's many people out there that complains about his work. They feel like he's a basic wrestler as far as his in-ring acclimate. I think he's good, and I feel like he's getting more comfortable with the promos each week. If you read the house show reports, he's getting more of a heel reaction on the road, and, you know, it's going to take time, but I think he's growing into this role. Do I think he should be world champion the week, you know, at SummerSlam? No, but if they keep building, maybe 3 or 4 months from now, maybe 6 months from now, I think he can grow into that role. But I can see the progression of him. And, you know, I've always thought he was a good wrestler, but his presence, his promo ability, and him delivering every week they put him in the ring is something I've been paying attention to. What you guys think?
Theory is definitely worthy of analysis right now. Greg, they are putting a lot of TV time on his shoulders. I think he continues to deliver. I'm not, I don't altogether disagree with Justin when he says, you know, maybe the selfie gimmick isn't main event, but I wouldn't get rid of it yet. I mean, is it something that he can, if he like in, you know, 6 years, he's a lead baby face and he's still doing the selfie gimmick to intake a nice heels. I mean, I wouldn't rule that out, and maybe it can become a main event gimmick because he's a main eventer and he's doing it. But so I don't think in and of itself it'll hold him back, but I get the idea that it feels a little gimmicky at this point, but it's WWE. You know what I mean? You know, Ricochet doesn't have a gimmick. He doesn't have a discernible personality. He's just exciting in the ring, and Vince McMahon grows bored with people like that. You need to have something that you do that's kind of your thing. And the selfie thing is that, but even if you set that aside, I was just watching him in the ring tonight, and I mean, he's standing in front of that crowd like he's been doing this as long as Miz. I mean, he is just really self-assured. He is someone who I think realizes not everybody is as smooth and comfortable at this stage as he is. And it's not like he just showed up. He's put in work. But he wasn't the centerpiece of NXT. You know, he's one of those guys, kind of like maybe Elias and maybe Baron Corbin, who got even more of a push on the main roster than in NXT. Greg, you might think of other examples. But I think Theory right now is passing a lot of the tests. And you can pass a lot of tests and still hit your head on a ceiling, but he's hitting passing a lot of tests, not hitting his head on the ceiling. And he's talking trash to Brock Lesnar and Roman Reigns. And yes, it's in the context of those who are going to beat each other up and I'm going to, you know, pin the scraps. He's not saying I can beat them one-on-one, but that'd be too much for people to accept at this point. So, yeah, you know, what do you think?
I do agree that the selfie thing is not a main event gimmick. I think if that's one of those things that will probably slowly go away as he finds himself more as a top-level heel character, and he won't need that kind of cheap heat crutch to use. But that, you know, again, that'll come with time. As he's more established, I think that'll go away slowly. It's sort of ironic to me that he is seemingly beginning a feud with Dolph Ziggler, because I see a lot of similarities in those two guys, where technically they are very sound. When they get in the ring, they are very good. But they're missing that one standout trait that for Dolph Ziggler held him back from being a real top guy for any substantial amount of time. You know, he's held the title before, the WWE title, and he's wrestled in main events and things like that, but he never reached a level that his potential or his in-ring seemed to hint at. And it's early for theory, and he certainly has time to break free of that. But I do see, at least very early on in his WWE quasi main event push here, a lot of similarities between him and Dolph, because I think Austin Theory is very good in the ring. I think he carries himself very well. He is very self-assured, but I just don't see that one, that standout trait that he has that's going to put him over the top as the guy in WWE, even on the Raw brand. You know, maybe not upending Roman Reigns as a top guy level guy, but even being a top level on Raw, that standout trait. So again, that is, could be something he develops over time. He's going to get an opportunity to do that for sure with the way that the WWE creative force is behind him. But I do think it's interesting that he's now feuding with Dolph Ziggler, because I think there are a lot of similarities in those two.
All right, very good. Justin, I appreciate the call. Good to hear from you tonight.
No problem. I always love calling in. Good talk with you guys.
Thank you so much. Call again. All right, we'll go to Ashley in Virginia next, and then up after that is going to be Scott, our on-site correspondent. Ashley, thanks for calling. What's on your mind about Raw tonight?
Hey, thank you so much for taking the call. I guess three things really quick. The first one is just really brief, but Veer, and I missed the beginning part of the show, so I'm sorry if you guys mentioned it, but I think, was that barking? Did he bark at the announcer in the back? I'm not sure what that was, but that was just kind of really bizarre to me.
Think any of us are sure what that was. I think he went boo? Was it boo, Greg?
Tune in next week to find out.
No, and actually, I promise you, we did not lead with that tonight, so you didn't miss it.
Somehow I figured you didn't, so I thought I'd be that person. But yeah, it just really stood out to me as just being strange. And then he just like does that creepy laugh and then leaves. I think I don't want to say missed the ball with him, but I just feel like they could have gone a completely different direction with this character. But two other things, and then I'll let you guys go to your on-site correspondent. But kind of what you were referencing earlier with Logan Paul and The Miz, as you were talking about that, I was watching or had Miz and Mrs. on in the background, and it just really stood out to me. Like, I can't boo The Miz, especially against Logan Paul. So if that's obviously the goal, it's just not going to work, I guess, on me personally. It's just, especially with, like, how long Miz has been in WWE now and just seeing, like, how, like, just watching his career play out, and everyone, you know, knows his story from Tough Enough and all that. It's really hard to boo him, and then seeing how much of a family man he is, and then, I don't know, that's just me personally. And I think Logan Paul really had a good promo tonight, though, still, so I'll give him, you know, credit for that, but it's just not working for me in this dynamic. I don't know what you guys think about that.
Greg?
I think that's one of the things you really lose when you – the lost art of kayfabe, when you have folks on Twitter out of character tweeting, when you have the ancillary programming that WWE has with Miz and Mrs. they had with Total Bellas and Total Divas and things like that, when you show the wrestlers out of their element, which is WWE, and you show them, it quote-unquote, in real life, as much as these shows portray real life, sometimes it can backfire on WWE in that someone that you want to be booed on WWE programming, you go, you know, right after Raw goes off the air and they're in a main event segment where you want them to be booed, they're showing their beautiful family, and they're a father of two children. And
their sense of humor about themselves.
I think that's the hard part with the way, and there's no way to put that toothpaste back in the tube now, but that's the hard thing about what WWE is trying to do, and it makes certainly WWE creative's job a little more difficult, I think, although they certainly haven't met the challenge either. But when you have these heels who are very likable on the outside. But certainly The Miz is a better heel than he is a babyface in the WWE ecosystem. It can be hard for people who watch those other shows and follow him on social media to really boo him, especially against someone so unlikable as Logan Paul is to a large part of their fan base. If it's The Miz against Rey Mysterio, you know, people are not going to have a problem booing The Miz and cheering Rey Mysterio, but it gets a little more difficult when it's someone like Logan Paul.
I don't like watching my sports team's rival star players do press conferences and come across as like really likable and intelligent and gracious. And like, I'm like, no, I want to boo you. Like, so I don't expose myself to that. I want to be exposed to the coach being nasty. And
that's definitely the reason I don't watch Miz and Mrs. because I want to boo the Miz. I want to be true to what WWE's creative wants me to do. That's definitely the reason I don't watch.
Yeah. So, you know, yeah, we get mixed signals in that way. Ashley, back to you.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. I wasn't able to turn it quick enough, and then he said something about mini turkeys, and it was actually chicken, so they just drew me in. But the last is just one of those things. But my last point, and then I'll let you guys go. My kind of perspective, and it's probably everyone's at this point, of the whole, like, that dark kind of creepy-ish video seems to be the direction of Edge. It looks like we got a new version of it tonight. And to me, the mask, Rey Mysterio's mask, really stood out more prominent than anything else, really. We saw a picture of Seth a couple times. But to me, it's kind of like a foregone conclusion now that it's Edge. Do you think it's going to be like a heel version of Edge? Or is this just like a darker version of like his good guy persona? Or because he kind of already tried that with Judgment Day, and so if he came back, like, you would assume he would have to be good, or just kind of the direction you see if you do agree that this is Edge, and do you think he's going to make his return next week since they're celebrating Rey, and if they're going in that direction, or what do you think about that? And I'll let you guys go. And Greg, thank you so much. I appreciate your work on Wrestling Night in America. I just wanted to thank you for that. I really enjoy the show every week, but take care, guys. I hope you have a good night.
Thank you, Ashley. Yeah, great talk. Great topics. Ryan, you're on hold. You gotta come up with good stuff. So I am going to neither agree or disagree that it's Edge, because I think there could be red herrings. I think that would be, you know, loves doing this stuff. Chris Jericho loved doing this. I mean, there's been, you know, I don't know, Greg, you can recite some examples of mystery videos in the past, and or maybe you can. And if people were guessing right or wrong, I think they want people to think Bray Wyatt. I think they want people to think Edge. Who are the top people being speculated about besides Edge and Bray Wyatt online that you've seen or from callers to the show?
You know, I think it's almost a foregone conclusion now that it's Edge. I don't see a lot of speculation outside of him anymore. I think it's, you know, maybe in the first video there were people who thought it was someone other than Edge, although a lot of people thought it was Edge right off the bat. And as the videos have progressed, I think people just are convinced it's 100% Edge now. I'm not seeing a lot of speculation outside of that.
Yeah. And do you think there's red herrings in this, and there's a chance someone else yourself, or do you think, no, let's just be honest, the suspense is over?
Yeah, I think it is for sure Edge. I think it's time for him to come back and gain a measure of revenge on the Judgment Day. And, you know, they have a big match coming up next week. It's in Madison Square Garden. So what better place for Edge to make his return and try to get his revenge on the Judgment Day when they have a very big match? I think, you know, this feud with Rey Mysterio has felt like it's going to culminate in this tag match that we're getting next week. So if this is indeed the culmination, it would make sense that Edge comes back at this moment, again, in Madison Square Garden. So, you know, WWE's home arena for a long time. So all signs point to I would expect it to be Edge, and I would expect it to be Edge next week.
Do you think Edge's character is going to be if we stipulate to these videos being about him, and let's say we're all in agreement on that at this point, that is where they're going. What do the videos signal about his characters? As you brought up, like, is it a babyface? Is he a different kind of a heel? Is it expunging himself of bad things he's done? Like, what can you extrapolate from the hints being dropped in the videos that apply to Edge?
That's a little more difficult. you know, there's been hints to, if you do some freeze framing, a lot of past opponents, not just in this run in WWE, but in many previous runs that Edge has had. I'm not sure really what to make of that, but you have to imagine he's coming back as a babyface because you know, he's got to come back and finish what was started with Judgment Day. You know, I don't think he can come back as a babyface or a heel without acknowledging the damage that Judgment Day did to him. I don't think that's something that they can just ignore. And Judgment Day has been referencing that attack on Edge as well. It's not something that they've
right.
let go of. So that makes me think that he will return and get his revenge on Judgment Day. But as far as what character it is, it's very hard too, because it's hard to turn someone babyface because they're attacked by heels. You're not starting
yeah.
that babyface out on a very strong foot. And, you know, Edge has years of history behind him, so maybe it's not that important in this case. But that return promo where he's going to have to explain why he did what he did with Judgment Day, and if he wasn't turned on, he'd still be in Judgment Day. So, like, was there a seeing of the light while he was out? You know, that would have to be the case in order for his babyface turn to make any semblance of sense.
Yep. All right. Let's go to our on-site correspondent, Scott, find out a few things from In the Arena tonight. Scott, thank you for taking time to join us tonight after attending Raw.
Oh, not a problem. Thank you.
Absolutely. So our first question is about Logan Paul and Miz. Tell us about the crowd reaction. As Greg mentioned earlier in the show, I don't know if you had called up to listen in yet or not, it's so hard to trust what you hear on TV because WWE mastered during the Thunderdome era,
mm-hmm.
creating a simulation of crowd noise that matched their intended reaction they wanted fans to have. And now, you know, you can see a total audience not reacting at all, but you hear a crowd reacting and you get suspicious. So
mm-hmm.
tell us they didn't pipe in cheers for Logan tonight. So let's not, you didn't miss that, but it is hard to tell if they're muted or what. So yeah, talk about the reaction to Logan and Miz.
All right. So first of all, I want to talk about the Miz. First of all, so I think the caller right before me brought it up. He got a huge reaction. I mean, from this first backstage interview, like as soon as he came on the screen, it was just like a loud, yeah! Like, it was one of the top pops of the night, to be honest with you. And I was shocked. I looked to my right, and it was just a whole crowd that loves The Miz. And so when he came out before a segment, a crowd popped. Everyone got on their feet, you know, was excited to hear him. Just before the Logan Paul segment started, I think it was the six woman tag match was just reaching its conclusion, or it might have already concluded. But like the crowd started chanting, "Logan, Logan!" It was a loud chant. But as soon as the Miz threw his video or mentioned his name, you heard boos. So it was a mixed reaction. And as he came out, the crowd booed. They were more boisterous, the boos. But he had a small section behind him when he mentioned Impulsive, I guess his name is his podcast or YouTube show, whatever it is. But like, there's some guys behind me. And they're like, yeah, Impulsive, yeah. It was just like, so he has his fans. He has his fans, definitely. But like, The Miz, like, I was like legit shocked. I'm like, wow, like, they love The Miz. Like, it's just, and then, you know, when he did his shtick, it's, you know, welcome to Miz TV. And, you know, the whole crowd went with it. It's just, yeah, I mean, The Miz has a following for sure. But Logan does too. So it's kind of like, I feel like, you know, the crowd, like, I mean, they know that they probably, you know, they should cheer Logan Paul, but I guess his background, he just rubs people the wrong way. But at the same time, you kind of get the sense that people want to like him, but they just don't trust him. They just, you know, I guess he just thinks he's a jerk. So it's kind of, yeah, it was weird. But I was curious to know, like, how it sounded on TV, because they just generally, like, they booed him at a time, but they cheered him. They had a Logan Paul chant. So, honestly, I don't know. It's kind of like, very polarizing.
Was there an ebb and a flow based on the dynamic of the segment that seemed to change who was cheering and who was booing? Because sometimes it's not, and Todd Martin's pointed this out during a variety of circumstances with WWE, it's not so much that a segment wins fans over, like a wrestler wins them over during a segment, as much as sometimes one group is loud, and then they quiet down, and the other group becomes loud later. So is there anything more you can add as far as that goes, if there were some lines that stuck or some moments that clicked, or the crowd, maybe the ones who were anti-Logan Paul, rose up at any point?
Not really. I mean, they didn't really, rise up for him. I mean, there was some war chants. You know, he kind of, spit, talked through it. So, kind of died out a little bit. But once the, once the attack happened, the crowd was kind of muted a little bit. But as soon as, Ciampa came out and attacked him, I think it was more so, okay, all right, we're supposed to cheer, boo this guy, boo the Miz and cheer Logan. But, even as he scurried out of the ring, they booed. So, but like I said, I can hear the vocal people who are behind them, but they kind of feel it's kind of like that, the Roman Reigns effect from a few years ago, where you would have the very loud kids and women screaming for Roman, but the men would boo so loud that his supporters would kind of die out, and all you heard was the boos. So that kind of is like how I felt with Logan. It was like supporters that wanted to cheer, but they're like, oh, it's probably not cool to cheer this guy because I don't want to come off looking like an idiot or a jerk. So I'm going to shut up. And so you hear more of the boos. But, I don't think it was like we hate this guy. Oh, my God. No, it's definitely, I think in Nashville, he's going to get his vocal friends. Maybe enough. I don't know. Maybe too much hardcore fans that might be there that may drown out the cheers for him. But, yeah, I mean, it's kind of hard to tell, to be honest with you. I was like, because that was the one thing I was looking forward to the most. Because I don't know how much his announcement moved tickets. I bought my tickets when they first went on sale a couple of months ago. So I don't know. A couple of weeks ago is when they started advertising him locally, Logan Paul is going to be here. So I don't know if that caused people to cheer. But, I mean, he seems to have his following. It's just hard. It's really hard to tell exactly, where the crowd stands with it and how they will over time.
Greg Parks, jump in with a question.
Yeah, one of the things that we've talked about earlier in the show was Becky Lynch, Bianca Belair, and Becky Lynch is a heel. And it seems to depend on the city in terms of what kind of reaction she gets. So interested in what level of babyface reaction did Bianca Belair get tonight from the live crowd? And how much heel heat did Becky Lynch get versus how much was she cheered?
She got the, you're here, so we're supposed to boo you type of reaction. When her music first hit, everyone jumped on their feet, Becky, woo! And then, she comes out, and it's kind of like, damn it, she's a heel, so we're not supposed to cheer. So we just watch her, we have our phones out, we're taking pictures, and, we're, adoring how she looks, because, she always looks fly every week. But then she starts talking, and she starts cutting a promo, and that's when, all right, it's our time to boo. Let's boo. And, and it's at that point where, then when Bianca's music hit, Tampa loves Bianca, and I love Bianca. I was here last year. I went to WrestleMania last year when she was here, and, she has to use following. So, of course, as soon as she comes out, everyone cheered her. But while she had a strong babyface star reaction, I got the sense that if these two were babyfaces, Becky would have definitely got more cheers than Bianca.
Okay.
Let me just say this. You guys go, because I heard called up. To me, Becky, I understand that we want her to be a face. We would much rather her be a face, and I agree with you, Wade. I find her entertaining. I like what she's doing. To me, she kind of has hit that rock level in terms of. When a Rock wants to play heel, sure, the crowd will boo him, but, people love the Rock.
Yeah.
He's entertaining. He's a guy. And I kind of feel like that way with Becky. And it's been feeling that way for months for me. So I kind of want to get you guys' opinion on that. Do you guys kind of agree or see what my point is when I say, the crowd, she's kind of at that level where they can't wait till she turns heel. And in years later from now, people are going to watch, this time when her being a heel and kind of appreciate the work that she's done.
I see the comparison. Greg?
Yeah, for sure. And I think that's right the way it was described, which is people like Becky Lynch so much. And we've talked about this with other wrestlers in the recent past, but people like her so much when she is a heel, they're going to go along with it and boo her. they're going to give her the desired reaction because they like her so much. Even if they'd rather cheer her and have her be a babyface, they acknowledge what she's doing is good work, and they're going to boo her for it because that's the reaction she's trying to get out of the audience. So I think there is some value to being as popular as Becky Lynch is, but also being a heel in that some of the crowd's going to go along with what you want to do. Even though they would rather cheer you, they like you so much that they want it to be seen that you're good at your job, so they're gonna boo you. And we talked about that with other wrestlers over the years, but I think Becky Lynch has also kind of reached that level with some fans too.
Mm-hmm. Scott, what jumped out to you about the crowd tonight being in the building more than anything else? Was there anything else surprised you or is sort of indicative of what's working or not working in WWE on the Raw roster right now?
Yeah. No one's a heel. No one's a heel with the exception of Theory. And let me explain. I mean, Kevin Owens, when this music hit, everyone's like, oh, yeah, I can't even myself. I'm like, yeah, Kevin, I haven't seen him in a while. But, you know, you're cheering him, you know, but then you realize, okay, he's a heel. Again, once again, let's boo him. All right, it's time to boo. But then, like, when the commercial break hits, you know, he jumps on the table and he, like, lays on the table and kind of interacts with Byron a little bit. So, you know, he laughs and kind of finds that funny. Then he goes over to this kid who's in a wheelchair and he just looks like a normal human being. Seth Rollins, another one. You know, his music hits, everyone gets up on him, gets on their feet, wants to sing along. And then he does the heel shake, and you kind of, okay, let's boo. But as soon as his music hits, hey, let's cheer along. But Theory was the only guy who, as soon as his music hit, everyone got on their feet as if, you know, he reacted, as if he's a star. But they just don't like him. And it's like, you know, they booed him and, you know, gave him a hard time with the what chant. And then, it seemed like he got under his skin, and he reacted, and they booed him then. And then, like, during the match, I don't know if this was on TV or not with AJ, there was a loud "you can't wrestle" chant. But I don't think it was, you know, like serious. It was more like sarcastic, just to get on their skin. And like he reacted to it, and fans love that. So to me, like, that was the biggest thing, is that no one is really hated, like, as a heel, maybe exception of the people who hate Logan Paul. But in terms of like the main characters week to week, no one is like really hated. It's just like, okay, if it's our time to boo, let's boo. But Theory was the only guy to me who stood out as throughout, from his entrance to the promo to the match to the post match, it was just like, we don't like this guy, like, but we'll pay to see him get beat, that type of reaction, not go away, we don't want you here, as you know, Logan Paul.
How did the women's 3-on-3 match go with all the 24/7 shenanigans? Did the crowd laugh and slap their knees and go along with it and get a chuckle out of it, or were they dead silent, or was there some hostile pushback to it?
No, we actually got excited for it, and I did too, because before the match started, the guy next to me, it was like 10:20 Eastern, and like, you know, he was joking with his girlfriend. He's like, yeah, look, we have time for about 4 commercial breaks in 1 match. And then, you know, then Alexa Bliss music hit, and it was like, oh, okay, at least, you know, there was a couple of Alexa Bliss fans in the crowd, the little girls who had the Lily Dolls, and they had their signs made, so they're see Alexa, so I'm happy, you know, they got to see her. And then, you know, the match started. And then when I saw this, like, you know, I was on my phone, I'm just, you know, waiting for, because I knew the main segment was going to be Logan Paul, and I knew the dark main event was going to happen, so I'm just waiting for that. No one wasn't really paying attention to the match, as was the crowd, no one really cared. But as soon as, you know, we saw Reggie pop up in the crowd, it was like, oh, what's going on? And R-Truth came out. And when all that happened, we all just laughed. It was just like a constant back and forth. I didn't know if that made TV or not, because it was just too hokey, like, to me. Like, this can't really be on TV, but it seems like you guys did see it. But the last crowd, we liked it. It was the only time we reacted, because, you know, no one cared after that. Literally, the guy next to me didn't know the match was still going on. I didn't know if the match was still going on or not. I'm like, is there still a match? And then, oh, we saw Austin get the roll-up. So far as, like, it woke the crowd up, and I got the point of it. It was just more like, okay, we know you're kind of dead, because it hit 10 o'clock. You know, people are starting to leave. And, you know, even myself, I'm getting sleepy and tired after the Theory match. So, you know, it was just more so kind of something to wake us up. And as soon as after that, you knew the main segment was going to start.
Greg, do you want to jump in?
Yeah, what was the what was the crowd size? I mean, was it did it feel like a sellout there?
Oh, for sure, for sure. It's about 90% full, I would say. I mean, maybe more than that, honestly. The only section I saw that was visibly like empty was what they didn't sell, which was about 2/3 of the top bowl, like the 300 level, on the hard camera side and near the back of the arena. But other than that, the whole arena was filled. I mean, you know, there were some scattered seats near where the hard camera station, but I guess it's just, you know, that probably once again not for sale. But for the tickets that they could sell, they pretty much sold it out. It was a packed night. I mean, it was hell to get into the parking downtown in Tampa, and to get into the arena. But you know, luckily I had floor seats, so I didn't have to worry about that crowding. But it was a pretty packed house. We do well here.
Did the
WWE
what
does well
did
here.
The what chance during the promos? Did that happen during, like, every promo, or was it only the promos that the crowd seemed to kind of get tired with? Or, you know, was there any pushback from any fans who booed the what chance? Because there were a couple times during promos on the show that they were pretty audible on the broadcast.
Oh, well, yeah, again, like, you know, they really, like I said, they got out of the theory skin with the what chance. It seemed like I said, they just wanted to annoy him. A couple of other people who got those chants. Obviously, like I said, it started with Logan, but he talked through it. I don't remember it being in too many promos with what. And I honestly didn't get a lot of pushback, which is kind of like annoyed me because I hate that chant. So, but I didn't want to be the one, you know, to get up and like, shut up. That's what I wanted to say because I hate that. But I mean, I don't know if there are other people in other sections that might have been booing it. You know, I was like I said, that show's really good seats to be around more so of the family, so I wouldn't be around a obnoxious, you know, wrestling fan sometimes that sits in other areas. So I didn't really hear that. But for me, the only times I can think of the what chants were during the Theory promo and. Like they started with Logan Paul, but he, you know, kind of he talked through it and it died out.
The opening segment for us, I don't know if you got there in time for a dark match or a pre Raw match, but was Titus O'Neil standing in the ring and celebrating WWE's charity work and bringing smiles to people's faces. He said WWE wants to simply make sure we all have a good time. He didn't say anything about subsequent hush payments that might occur. And it was kind of a weird way to open Raw. So tell me about what your thought was as that was happening, if there was anything that warmed the crowd up for Titus coming out, like if they said, you know, we're going to open with this. So, just kind of take us to that part of the show.
Wait, this is what I typed in my notes. Why start the show like that? I honestly didn't know if that made TV. It was so weird because I did get there on time. Just as I was getting into my seat, they were taping a main event, and it was Akira Tozawa versus Reggie. I didn't see how the match concluded, but Tozawa won. And then the second match was Alpha Academy versus Mustafa Ali and Cedric Alexander, which I want to talk about, so please remind me on that. But yeah, but, you know, as, you know, obviously they go to, we're about to go on USA, everyone cheers, yay. And then, you know, someone was in the ring, you know, some big dark, you know, some big black buffy guy. I'm like, I don't know who that was. I couldn't tell from what I sat. Like, I didn't see him at first, and he was in the dark. And then Mike Rome announced that, hey, it's WWE's Global, and he kind of got cut off a little bit, and we were like, okay, what happened? The lights went dark. And then the show signature started, and then he announced Titus O'Neil. And, you know, Titus had a big reaction because obviously he's a local hero here, sort of, and, you know, everyone loves him. But as he starts talking, like, he just said a bunch of nothing. It was weird. I didn't know what he was talking about. I didn't understand why he was there. I thought he was maybe, you know, going to introduce someone for a minute, honestly, because I kind of forgot that he has the title of Global Ambassador. But when I heard, like, Mike Rome announcing that, I'm like, I don't know, for some reason, it just popped in my head. I'm like, he's going to announce this. Stephanie is the interim CEO and chairwoman. Like, here she is. I didn't know what was happening. Then when Titus was in the ring, I'm like, what is he talking about? Is he going to mention Vince? Is he going to mention what's going on with the scandal? Is he going to mention with Sasha Banks and Naomi Leave? I didn't know what he was there for. And then he's just like, welcome to Monday Night Raw. And he tossed the mic. And then they threw it to the package of the women's match. So I honestly wasn't sure if it made TV, but I just kept looking at my phone and watching. I'm like, well, it's like 8:05, and it has to be on. Like, so I don't – so yeah, it was weird. The crowd, I mean, respected him, like I said, but like, when he was done, everyone was just like, okay. And then the match started, and it's just like, all right, we just – or the actual show started. But, yeah, I thought that was strange. I didn't know what he was talking about. I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. I don't have any words for it. What was that?
Scott, it made me think there's another article coming out this week, or some network and advertiser network executives and advertisers have raised a stink about or I shouldn't say raised a stink. They've shown concern over WWE still having Vince McMahon in a powerful position with everything that came out a couple weeks ago in that second major Wall Street Journal article. I think the biggest sign that Stephanie has gained power is the fact that Jimmy Smith had facial hair. Vince McMahon hates announcers with facial hair. Jimmy Smith's grown his beard back. He looks better. He's one of those guys who looks better with a beard, I think. I think he thinks that because until he got to WWE, I think he had facial hair most of the time. So that made me think Stephanie's really taken the reins and allowed facial hair on an announcer. And this segment might have meant it because she's the one who retweeted Twitter co-founder Biz Stone saying philanthropy is the future of marketing. It's the way businesses are going to win. I think I got that pretty close to right. You know, you're just like lean heavy into we bring smiles to people's faces and we do great things, and it doesn't matter your race, nationality, or economic status. This is a safe haven. No politics here. So just ignore when we go to Saudi Arabia and tell you how great it is. I don't know. And
yeah,
that
was the line that got me, because I wasn't listening to what he said until he said, well, that's why we would never mention religion or politics. And I was just like, and he kind of heard a crowd like, oh. I mean, this is a strong, you know, Tampa's a mixed city. You know, everyone interacts, so, you know, you're going to have your Trumpers there, but I mean, everyone has their views, but it's kind of, you know, free will, so to speak here. It's a very liberal city, and like, so, you know, we hear that, it's like, And so he kind of heard the groans from the crowd, and then, you know, that's when it ended. And I was like, okay, what was that? Like, yeah, very weird.
Yes. Greg, by the way, what'd you think of the Titus segment? We didn't get into that yet.
Yeah, I felt bad for Titus, and I thought this was much more egregious than Vince McMahon himself coming out and doing what he's done on SmackDown and Raw when he's made these sort of random announcements during this time of the accusations against him. Because, you know, Vince is Vince. And, you know, we kind of know who Vince is at this point, and him going out there. And, you know, we know what the game is. We know what he's all about. But to use someone like Titus O'Neil, who is universally beloved, who is, who doesn't have a mark against his name from anybody, and to use him as kind of a pawn in Vince trying to put over WWE as this squeaky clean and its squeaky clean image when we know behind the scenes it's anything but, I mean, that to me is more egregious than Vince himself coming out, because dragging someone like Titus into this is pretty shameful, and that opening segment was, you know, didn't sit right with me for that reason.
Yeah, and I mean, yeah, they support causes that promote family health and community, and it's just there's a lot of political contributions and connections to the McMahon family that are kind of doing the opposite of that in so many ways, especially recently. So it felt pretty rich, and it felt like some sort of preemptive strike against something coming up, or just they're in nervous mode, or maybe it'll come out. It's just, oh, they moved from TVPG to TV14. And so they want to, you know, let people know what their mission statement is, even if they're going to, you know, say the word ass instead of behind now or something. I don't know. I think that's making a lot out of something that might end up being nothing there. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that was on Raw, and that was kind of weird. Scott, tell us about what happened, before and after Raw, the TV show proper.
Oh, sure. like I said, Akira Tozawa beat Reggie. It sounded like the crowd was booing Tozawa and cheering Reggie, or really behind him. So I guess that was supposed to be the and he was supposed to be the heel, and Reggie was the face. But, yeah, after that, Alpha Academy came out, and they had a match against Mustafa Ali and Cedric Alexander. But the biggest takeaway from that is that it seems like Ali has gotten his first name back, or last name. I don't remember which name he took away from him, but it was noticeable. Like, someone behind me was like, "Oh, Mustafa Ali." It was like, "Oh, wow, he has his name back." And so I didn't. I kind of picked up on that. But the fans, the crowd, really love and really were behind Ali. Really like that. It doesn't come across well on TV sometimes. When he comes out, it kind of sounds muted. But, yeah, he actually, you know, fans really like him, and, you know, he did really well in the match. It didn't go too long, maybe about 8 or 9 minutes, but Alpha Academy won with their finisher. I don't know if it's new or not, but it's kind of like Otis picks up the opponent. I think he picked up Ali, put on his shoulders, and put him on Gable's shoulder, and from the top rope, Gable gave him like a flying power bomb, so to speak. But, yeah, it was a nice 10-minute match. They went over. Carl was, once again, you know, playing heel, playing we're going to boo you, but not really because we love Otis and we love Gable. We love, oh, thank you. Like, I was really over with the crowd. That was the dark match before the show went on there. And then after the show, it was Riddle and Rollins. Riddle won in about 2 minutes with the RKO out of nowhere to send the crowd home happy. But, yeah, those are the only two matches I were able to see before and after Raw.
Kevin Owens came back. Talk about the crowd reaction for him.
Yeah, once again, as soon as his music hits, you know, everyone jumps on their feet and was really behind him, cheering him on. You know, as you know, when we were on a commercial break, as they were setting up the ring, you know, he, like I said, was interacting somewhat with Byron Saxton on a announce table and interact with the kid in the wheelchair, might have been a cancer patient. You know, interact with him and interact with some of the fans up front. But overall, people were cheering him. But as he went into the segment, doing his shield stick, everyone, you know, played their part and booed him. But yeah, it was a decent pop. Like, he was one of the top pops of the night.
Cole, Greg, is there anything else you want to bring up to Scott?
Yeah, just one more question. Speaking of pops, you know, you kind of talked about who got some of the biggest heel reactions, but who got the biggest babyface reaction? Who felt like the biggest babyface on the show?
As in they're cast as babyfaces and we're going to cheer them as babyfaces? Is that what you mean?
Yeah.
Okay, all right. Yeah, that is with this crowd, kind of weird. I would say as babyfaces, AJ Styles had a pretty good pop. Ali had a good pop, but not to that level. It was kind of tough. Between AJ Styles and Bianca, I would say. Rey Mysterio also had a good pop, but, you know, as soon as he came out, he went to commercial break. And they got to stop doing that. I mean, he had come out of, the music hit and we're going to go to commercial. It kind of kills the crowd because the crowd was excited, like, to see Rey and, like, to see them into the ring and give them like their full attention and ovation. But, you know, going to commercial break that early kind of killed it. But far as like sustained pops, AJ Styles got that pop. As soon as he got in the ring, a lot of AJ Styles chant broke out and during the match in itself. I would think, yeah, AJ, now I'm thinking through AJ Styles had the biggest pop.
All right.
Scott, is there anything else you want to share with us before we wrap up here?
Yeah. One more thing is Riddle, I'm not sure where he is and how far his character can go. I was really like looking forward to seeing like how the crowd would react to him. And while he had a decent pop, like when his music hit, it was more so, you know, preteens or high schoolers who kind of like, you know, cheered for him a little bit. But it wasn't sustained. It wasn't like, we really like this guy. You know, some guy. People were bopping and going along with the song and, you know, with the bro chant, but he's not, like, as over as that top guy that I thought that I thought he could have been a couple of months ago. So that kind of stood out to me.
Interesting. That's a noteworthy observation. Scott, thank you so much for calling in. You're a great outside correspondent.
Yeah, thanks so much. Thanks for having me. They're coming back on December 30th for SmackDown, and so I hope to, if I can make it, I definitely will go, and hopefully be a correspondent again at that time.
That'd be great. I appreciate it, Scott.
All right, not a problem.
Enjoy. Yep, you too. Enjoy your week. All right. We'll get back to phone calls now. If you've been listening in and want to join the conversation, you can still call 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. And push 1 on your keypad when you call if you want to be brought onto the show. All right. We're going to go to Kyle in Baltimore next. Kyle, you've been listening in. What have you got to add to our conversation about Raw tonight?
Yeah, so about the whole Becky Bianca thing with her being, it's now, yeah, it's very, of course, it's different from Liv and Ronda because they just started their feud and it's going to be every time they're going to do this. Because tonight felt like the big deal of them because I rewatched the video package with them and rewatched that, their back and forth. And it's, to me, Becky still comes off as the biggest star than Bianca, even though Bianca is getting cheered and she's over. But her personality is so much as a heel. She's like, deep down, she's a heel, even though she's a baby face. But when it comes to Becky, it's more, again, maybe because for me, I'm more of a Becky fan than I am Bianca, so I'm going to see it kind of differently. And I can't stand really Bianca's champion anymore at this point, at least for me personally. Because I said before, but if Becky's more popular and more over, or to the point where she is getting booze and she's getting ready, people still want, it's like, I don't know, I can't really speak about the people, I can speak for myself. To me, every time I watch Bianca, I get so bored at this point. I feel the same way how I felt when she was the SmackDown Women's Champion. I am not feeling her as champion at all. She's been very quiet and dull as a character, and great matches, sure, but can't just be a great wrestler. Her character is not clicking for me. And Becky is delivering every single thing with her. I said before, she's made a veteran Raw. She's been the highlight for the last few weeks after WrestleMania. It all adds up for being champion again, and I know it's not what some people don't want, but I just see that happening, and I won't hate it because Becky's doing the best work, and I hope she does win the title back at SummerSlam. But I am looking forward to that rematch.
All right, so Kyle,
that's
Kyle,
how I feel about
Kyle.
It.
Yeah. So pause there. Greg, I want to throw to you on Bianca because we've talked quite a bit about Becky. We talked a little bit about Bianca. I thought when she interrupted Carmella and just decided to pull the string and let go and go into the, because I need to talk now and interrupt because I'm the bestest and the fastest and the, you're just like, really? Like, it feels like a video game or like the you know, an old CD skipped and it just like jumped to Bianca's like catchphrase thing. And it just didn't feel natural. It's like, I'm going to interrupt you because I'm tired of hearing you talk. And now I'm going to go into my spiel of EST this and EST that. It's like, she is so held back by her gimmick right now. And the whole girl and this and that, it's just like they are having her lean too hard into a two-dimensional caricature of somebody who clearly has shown herself outside of the confines of Raw and SmackDown and scripting to be, I don't want to say like overstate and say transformational star, but like her ceiling is a lot higher when she's what she is like if you were to just happen to sit next to her at a restaurant and hear her talk. To a friend or something like that. Like, let her be her and tell her to dial down the gimmicky crap. You know, we talk about Theory and if it's a top guy thing to do the selfies. It's not a top woman thing to be leaning hard on a gimmick that was created in NXT to get heel heat because she couldn't stop talking about herself in a braggadocious way. And it feels lazy and tired and scripted and unflattering, and there's so much more for her to do as a more grounded, real person. And I go to this every sometimes every week. Sometimes I let 6 weeks go by without ranting about it. But tonight it really jumped out to me as like, come on. Like, no, this is holding her back. So there's so much there that's good, and there's still that's bad. Greg, your thoughts?
I see what you're saying. I guess for me, it's not as big of a problem, I guess. I think the whole EST gimmick is – I don't have a problem with that, generally speaking, because I think it's a fine line, though, between having the confidence as a babyface to be the best, and everything that goes along with that, and being proud of that. And it's a thin line between that and being, as you kind of mentioned, overly braggadocious about it, about rubbing it in, about leaning on it too heavily too often. And I think that's the line that WWE has to walk with Bianca Belair, because I think that, you know, and I think we might disagree here, the EST gimmick is fine, I think, for a babyface. Because I, you know, having a baby face with a lot of confidence is not a huge problem for me. But I think the problem, and this goes back to sort of the point the caller made it too, is, you know, and again, for me, this is nitpicky. I think Bianca Belair is great. I think she's done a fantastic job. But I think the character growth is something we haven't seen. And that's endemic of WWE, period, in terms of their characters. Their characters do not undergo a tremendous amount of growth over time, which is why Dolph Ziggler is the same guy he has been for 10 years, which is why The Miz is generally the same guy he's been for 10 years. You know, you would like to see Bianca Belair, as she climbs that ladder of success in WWE, grow as a character with that success. And I don't think we've seen that to the degree it should have taken place. But again, for me, that's sort of a nitpicky thing. That's not a pound the table every 6 weeks and bring this up sort of thing that I think it is for you.
Yeah.
But, you know, so I think we agree with the issue. I think we just disagree about how big of an issue it is for her.
It feels like a crutch, and it doesn't feel spontaneous or authentic. And I think what holds people back who are potential top-tier people is moments of where I think the audience senses there's authenticity and they're not just performing. And it just feels like now's my time to do this shtick. And I think people tune that out. I don't think they relate to it. I have no problem with baby faces with confidence. I have a problem with baby faces who go into a repetitive, cliched, inauthentic shtick that she's been doing sort of mindlessly for years, and it originated as a way to get heel heat. I think there's more ways to be confident, and I think there's ways to do it in a way that comes across, like I say, more spontaneous than authentic and relatable. I don't think you're showing up Carmella by going, I'm the bestest and the fastest. It just feels like a writer was under pressure and came up with something, and Belair just said, I'm just here to show up and read what I'm told. And she's thrown in the towel on, you know, growing as a character, like you say, you know, like Dolph. And I hope we do it, though. I hope we see Dolph Ziggler grow as a character. You know, I mean,
yeah,
I want
sure.
to see him not just, you know, yell at the top of his lungs again when it comes time for him to express his motivations here. So, Kyle, anyway, back to you. Show's running long, so keep it short, but go ahead and make your point or ask us another question.
Yeah, it's for me. It's just, I'm based off of favoritism. I'm more a Becky fan than I am Bianca. That's just how it is for me personally. But I'll move on to Roman Reigns coming back next week. He decides to show up on Raw. Why is that? And what does that mean moving forward? Is he going to show up on Raw frequently, or is it just a one-time thing and go back to SmackDown not doing nothing?
Yeah, Greg, one of the problems since Roman Reigns won at WrestleMania is he has – Raw's been without the champ, you know, their champion. It's not like Roman became the Raw champion and SmackDown champion. He just became the SmackDown champion who stole the Raw title or commandeered it over, you know, brought it over. It's like, you know, it's, you know, wrestling storyline, you know, over the years. Oh, if this foreigner wins the title, they're going to take it to their country and not come back. You know, Sheik Adnan-El Casey was going to win the AWA title from Nick Bockwinkel and take it away. And that's what turned Nick Bockwinkel babyface for a brief time in the AWA. Roman took the belt from Raw. So it does, it struck me too, like it struck Kyle as sort of novel, like, wait, you're plugging SmackDown, right? Roman's on the screen. No, he's coming to Raw. Well, he ought to. He's the Raw champion, and SummerSlam is a week away. So it shouldn't feel as novel as it does. I know they want to keep Roman special, but boy, did they, you know, strip away one of the central prizes of Raw almost. Yeah. Anyway, go ahead, Greg.
And that's one of the major downsides of not only combining the titles, not combining the titles, but making an undisputed champion at the time they did, where Roman Reigns is now going to be a special attraction and he's going to be taking more time off. Now, you know, that would be one thing if he was Universal Champion and, you know, the Universal Championship wasn't on SmackDown as often. Roman Reigns wasn't on SmackDown as often, but the WWE title was still a weekly presence on Monday Night Raw. Now you have both titles on Roman Reigns, and now neither show is getting titles for weeks at a time. And I really think that's been one of the things that has hurt Monday Night Raw over the last several weeks and months, is that lack of focus at the top of the card without that champion there each and every week. And we know when there was a champion on Raw, WWE champion, they weren't defending the title every week, but they were always building to something. They were building to a non-title match. They were building to, you know, a number one contenders match between two guys who would face the champion at pay-per-view. They were building to that pay-per-view match. Now they've lost that storytelling aspect of the main champion on Raw, and it really feels that way. It really feels lacking in that top-level direction on Monday Night Raw.
All right, Doc, Kyle, back to you. Anything else?
Yeah, it's just a problem. I think it's just, I've, you know, it's kind of like the Becky Lynch effect. You know, people thought Becky was overexposed being on both shows every single, I think it's better being overexposed and not there at all. I said that before, but yeah, so I think last thing with Seth Rollins is, he needs to have this victory over Riddle because he has been a complete loser all year and needs a victory and should go back and face Roman Reigns and do that match and have a definitive victor. And I'll leave you with that initial call.
All right, Kyle, thanks. Greg, anything you want to add?
No, I think that was one of the things that struck me as I was watching, you know, Riddle versus Seth Rollins being built for SummerSlam is, both of these guys really need a win, I think, at this point. And probably Seth Rollins more so, but, you know, it was also good to see Rollins fighting Ezekiel tonight and you know, getting the victory, because I think, you know, again, Rollins and Riddle, both guys who really need a big win because they've lost so many times and lost in high-profile situations.
What do you think of the finishes on this show? We had a sequence of DQ, DQ countout. WWE's kind of fallen, well, I don't know, statistically countout finishes apparently are more common than I remember, but it seems like they're happening more often. And they're turning them more into storylines. And you know, I feel like I shouldn't bring anything up because they're not doing the distraction finishes as much as they were, where every wrestler was just turning their back to their opponent when there wasn't a threat, but somebody showed up on a stage or at ringside and yelled at them. And we're not getting that now, but now they're really leaning into these countouts, and we even had a countout title change possibility tonight. I get that each of these, and the same thing with distraction finishes, you can justify them in the individual moment, like in the micro. Okay, this match, we're trying to protect this person, or we don't want to pay off to this yet, and all that. And you know, they can, if you decided as a booker, as a promoter, as a company, that you're not just going to do clean finishes, you know, 19 out of 20 times, that's not going to be the company you are. You're going to make a clean pinfall or submission stand for something bigger in the narrative structure of your company. Then you sort of trap yourself into not being able to do them a lot when you have people facing each other who are relatively even, or it gets done to get somebody like Omos over as this unstoppable killer who can just, you know, squash anybody, whether it's Riddle or Dawkins or Montez. And then it's a little bit different if he's against Randy, but it's not like they're considered physical equals. So we're getting them kind of leaning hard in a different way than usual into their philosophy of avoiding clean finishes, but finding, quote, creative ways otherwise to get out of matches. What do you think of this incarnation of that?
Well, I do wonder, too, how much, you know, the closer we are to SummerSlam, the closer WWE wants to play it to the vest and not have some of these matches end in clean finishes. I know we had the Street Profits involved in two DQ finishes, which, as you brought up, probably not the best boost for them heading into SummerSlam, you know, losing to or getting handled by Omos and MVP. And then you had I believe the next one was AJ Styles and Theory, so Styles winning by countout and with the Ziggler Theory stuff. So I think, you know, the closer we get to big shows, the closer WWE tends to play it closer to the vest, where they don't want to give any potential results away. They don't want to put anyone over too strong. They want to keep everybody on uneven footing. So yes, they want to put them out there in a match, but they don't want to give away any kind of finish to those matches. I think that could be one aspect of it that's in play, but you know, it's TV, and we've seen, I think the frustrating thing is we've seen WWE where wins and losses don't matter anyway. So, you know, someone getting pinned in a match is probably not going to matter 3 weeks from now anyway. So why even mask it with a DQ or count out finish? So it's kind of doubly frustrating, because you'd think that by doing a DQ or a count out, they're sort of protecting the clean finishes to come. But we've seen that, you know, finishes by and large don't really matter in WWE in the long run anyway. So we're getting sort of the worst of both worlds in this way.
We'll get to our caller Ryan in just a moment. I want to introduce this email first, though. Ed in High Desert, California said, I didn't make it through much of Raw. I saw the Bianca and Becky stuff. Considering this has been going on in some form or fashion for a year, I'd say it's limping to the end, as opposed to sprinting. The feud seems to have never hit a higher gear. Bianca has kind of flatlined. Becky is hot and cold and feels like a parody. And as previously mentioned by you, they missed out on the bigger star by shifting Becky heel. Whatever gains from the last year, I'm not sure they're enough to convince me it was a right course. This definitely is far from receiving the label great feud and rivalry. I think good matches have been hurt by drawn out bad creative on Raw, stretching this out way too long. Do you agree with that, Greg, as a premise that it's been stretched out too long, or even Ed's kind of negative view of it? I mean, the idea that a year later, almost a year later, they're going back to this match where Becky, you know, sort of blindsided Bianca in her return in a controversial finish, and now a year later, Bianca can get, you know, a legit satisfying win over Becky, or Becky can win again and extend the feud. I mean, I just think people would be complaining if they weren't going back to this, and I think they've had them kind of go their own separate way enough over the last year that it doesn't feel like they just are feuding forever.
Yeah, that's something I mentioned earlier. It's not like it's been one continuous feud for the last 365 days. They're rivals. And so, you know, it's kind of like the a lesser Bayley-Sasha Banks feud, where no matter what they were doing, they always seemed to come together at some point. And that's kind of how it's been for Bianca and Becky over the last year, is they've battled in very big matches, but they've also done things with others during that time as well. And so I don't think it feels as stale. I mean, I don't think this match is super hot, certainly as hot as their WrestleMania match was. So this may be a little bit of a weaker match, but I don't think it's been that's indicative of how the entire feud has gone up to this point. And I do think, you know, there is the story of things coming full circle with them getting a match proper on SummerSlam this year compared to the match that they had last year. Bianca Belair maybe wanting to exercise some demons this year at SummerSlam by beating Becky Lynch, and Lynch seeing this as an opportunity to get in Bianca Belair's head about what she did at SummerSlam last year. So I think all those aspects coming together, and maybe I'm doing some storytelling that WWE's left out, but I think that's all made it sort of intriguing to me. I don't think it's super hot right now, but I also don't think that the entire feud has fizzled or anything by any stretch.
He adds on Dominic Mysterio. I looked it up. It says his debut is August 23rd, 2020. In these almost 2 years, is he significantly better? His in-ring work, his promo skills, and mic skills. I used to think he should be in NXT, but honestly, factoring in these 2 years, he really shouldn't be in wrestling. At this point, what's the high point you foresee with him? I don't agree with that. I think he is better. I think he has improved. I don't think he's out there looking like somebody who jumped ahead in line, even though he did. Greg, what do you think?
Yeah, I don't know. He's still kind of a mystery for me. We just haven't seen him really been given the ball to say, okay, have this 20-minute match. Let's see what you've got. I don't think we've seen that from him. I think he's been sort of hurt by the will they or won't they with Ray in terms of breaking up and turning heel. And I couldn't help but wonder, you know, this whole Judgment Day stuff too has not helped either. I mean, it just feels like they're running on a treadmill with the Mysterios against Judgment Day. It just feels like they're running in place here with this feud. They're not getting anywhere with it. And it kind of made me laugh that the idea that Judgment Day would be so desperate to have Dominic Mysterio join them. And I'm like, what has Dominic Mysterio done like to deserve the Judgment Day going after him so hard to join their ranks? And then sort of, I guess by the end, it was like they were sort of using that as a ploy and they weren't planning on having him join anyway. Like, I'm not sure if that's the way it ended up, but that's kind of the way that segment came across by the end of it. So maybe the Judgment Day are not as clueless as they first came across. But, yeah, you know, I think putting him with Ray is probably the right move because he can learn from his dad. He's out there with someone he's comfortable with. He's not being asked to carry those 20 to 25-minute matches because I just don't think he's ready for that yet. So he is able to learn under his dad in this way, and I think that's probably the smart way to do it.
Do you think Ray's going to bash Ray with a chair at MSG next week?
You said Ray's going to bash Ray. So
oh,
I'm
sorry.
Sure.
Yeah,
Dominic.
Who
do you think is going to bash who? Okay.
Is Dominic going to turn on Ray next week? Is that setting up?
I'm long past the point of predicting this turn. Like, it's been going on for so long now. Like, I can't bring myself to actually predict it happening anymore.
I was thinking that all along, you know, to some degree, it's, you know, always kind of there. But when I think it was Priest, maybe it was Balor, said, you know, you didn't pass the test. You should have bashed your dad with a chair, not just stood up and said, you know, I'll join you as a way to get to stop beating on your dad. I was like, you know, I didn't see any clues, you know, where it's like, oh, Dominic is, you know, we're supposed to pick up on the hand. But I feel like there's been some subtle body language, which could just be misreading unintended acting.
But I wonder if anyone's going to care as much now. At this point, like, well, is anyone,
yeah.
I think if you'd have done this a couple months ago when it was at the height of the teases and everything like that, you'd have gotten more of a reaction than if you're going to try and do it sort of out of nowhere.
I think for Dominic to grow, if he can grow, it's not going to be coming out and smiling and having his dad ride, you know, giving his dad piggyback rides, which is always kind of weird. And, you know, doing inverted 619 mirror image 619s that look clunky next to his dad. I mean, I think for him to grow, and he looks more like a man than a boy than he did 2 years ago. You know, like I think it would be more believable for him now to join the Judgment Day and be a heel understudy Punk who you just want to see get his ass kicked. I think that could work now. And I'm kind of rooting for that in part just because I've sort of had my fill of Ray and Dominic together. And even though I think it was the good thing to start with it for reasons pointed out. But I also think if you celebrate 20 years of somebody at MSG, it's pro wrestling. It's like a cake. It's not going to be eaten. It's going to be smashed in someone's face. A celebration is not going to end with, you know, fans standing and cheering and Ray leaving the ring and blowing kisses. It's going to end with, you know, something horrible. So
it would be like him losing in his hometown.
Yes. Yep. Okay. So let's, Ed just said, go VIP, everyone. Great content, good listen, and a fun time. So thank you. Okay. So we got an email on theory and the prophets. I don't want to get to wrap up, but first let's get to Ryan in Cumberland. Ryan, thanks for holding so long. What have you got for us today?
My question is on the Edge Vengeance that aired. I don't know if you noticed it, but said, I'm coming too. So that implies that someone else is coming with Edge. It could be Randy Orton. Could be Bray Wyatt. Could be Gangrel. Maybe somebody else. Who do you think that could be?
I thought it was that he was writing, I'm coming to Raw or I'm coming to SmackDown. Like, that's right. I thought it just, we didn't get to that. But you're reading it as Ryan, it means someone else is coming?
Yeah, because it would make sense
Did it have two O's or one? And maybe I'm misunderstanding it, but I thought it just had one O.
Yeah, I don't know, but it happened pretty quick, so I'm just not sure. I know a lot of people on Twitter think that maybe someone's coming with him just because Judgment Day is a stable. It doesn't make sense Edge would go in there all alone by himself.
Greg, what do you think?
I don't know. I tend to think it's going to be Edge alone, but you know, it's a good point that Edge is not stupid and he sees the odds are stacked pretty severely against him just in terms of the numbers game, and who would he bring if he were to bring someone to fight Finn Balor and Damian Priest? I don't know. Rhea Ripley also in the group. I don't know if she's cleared yet to return to action. She's kind of been out for a few weeks here, but you know, it could be Beth Phoenix, his wife, who he brings to even the score and offer a female perspective to offset Rhea Ripley at some point. Maybe not right away, even, but at some point.
What else, Ryan?
The second question I have is on Elias. Is there anyone that's ever improved so much as a wrestler? Because Ezekiel seems to be really good, but I don't remember Elias ever being very good in the ring.
So this either has to do with ring gear being really important, Greg, or Kevin Owens. Either way, Kevin Owens is missing out on a chance to say, I know Ezekiel and Elias are different people, because Elias couldn't get to the 2-star mark, and Ezekiel is always right around 3. What do you say to that?
I was about to say, just more ammunition to the fact that Ezekiel and Elias are two separate people. You know, that idea, you know, Elias is a slightly less good wrestler than his brother Ezekiel. Ezekiel, the younger brother, naturally he'd be more talented in the ring at this point. But no, you know, I don't know. I don't know if I would agree necessarily that Ezekiel is significantly better than what we've seen with Elias. I think some of it might have to do with the ring gear. Some of it might have to do with the opponents, you know, maybe better suited as a babyface than a heel. I don't know. But I think they're a lot closer to the same quality of wrestler than I would otherwise think.
All right, Dot Ryan, what else?
And the final question is Von Veer. Are they doing the George Steele Elizabeth gimmick with Sarah Shriver? Because even The Miz pointed out that Veer has a crush on Sarah.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't obvious to me because the segment was so short, but maybe. I mean, what else are they doing, Greg, if not that?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I hope that's not the case. I don't know that that's a winning gimmick for Veer, although I don't think, like, what he's doing currently now is all that much of a winner either. So it's that category of at least it's something. But I'd have to see more than a grunt to really make any kind of judgment on where that character's going.
All right, Ryan. Any closing words or anything else?
Well, the only other thing is I'm wondering is about that Jeff Jarrett match. If they're going to mention that he's wrestling Ric Flair next week, because they're pushing Jeff Jarrett pretty hard on TV now.
Greg, yeah, but not. What do you think of the follow up to the Jeff Jarrett referee announcement too?
That was so bizarre. Like, I never would have guessed Jeff Jarrett as the special guest referee for the Usos and the Street Profits. Talk about coming out of nowhere. Like, I don't even know how you follow it up properly, because it's just such a non sequitur of an announcement. Like, you know, I don't know. He has nothing to do with either team, so I'm not sure what you would do to make him more relevant to that match. If you chose him, you probably chose him because he does have nothing to do with the Street Profits and the Usos. So I don't know that you would want to put him on Raw to give him any more relevance to these two teams. I don't know. That was
it's just weird.
A strange announcement.
They did not make it any more clear tonight than it was Friday why they're reintroducing Jeff Jarrett and making him special referee. And is he even going to talk? Are they going to have him speak? I don't think they announced that for SmackDown. So it's weird, but yeah, it's also just what a, I mean, it sort of makes sense and it also doesn't make any sense. Jeff Jarrett and Jay Lethal against Ric Flair and Andrade. I mean, Andrade makes sense as a son-in-law, but Jay Lethal used to imitate Flair. Jeff Jarrett struts. I don't know. It's weird, but what a stretch of time here for Jeff Jarrett.
Yeah, seriously.
Yeah, but it's weird. All right, Ryan, I appreciate the call.
Okay, thanks for taking the call. I think I predicted Jeff Jarrett would be his opponent on Wrestling Night in America. Greg remembers that.
Ah, okay.
Oh.
There we go.
So now, did it make sense to you? Are we missing something, or did you just predict it for another reason?
I predicted it just because it was in Nashville, Tennessee.
I mean, it seems to be the only rationale for it. Okay, cool. Thanks, Ryan. We'll talk to you next time. All right, so we'll wrap up here with email from Greg on the Profits and then an email on Austin Theory. Greg from St. Clair Shores, Michigan, says, that was a very confusing segment with the Street Profits. Ford was the first one to cheat in the match, and he isn't caught, but when MVP cheats and is caught, Adam Pearce comes out to make it a tag match, which seems unfair because both teams interfered and MVP isn't even in ring gear. A few minutes after the tag match begins, Ford involves the Usos by throwing MVP into them, and the Usos interfere by throwing Ford off the top rope. But Adam Pearce has apparently stopped watching the live show that he's in charge of because he doesn't come out this time. Everybody's made to look like heels, and there didn't seem to be a point to any of it. Am I missing something? No, you're not. Have they given a reason why they need a special guest referee for the premium live event match between these two teams? Have the announcers or anyone explained why Jeff Jarrett was chosen? All the regular refs don't seem to be hapless. The ref tonight called it as he saw it. Yeah, this... I agree. I wrote in my report at pwtorch.com during Raw tonight, Greg. Ford Montez interferes, and he's made to look heelish in doing it, and the heels who then do it in return are the bad guys. I don't get it. I didn't get it. I thought it was poorly booked. I don't think there's logic to it. I don't think there's any defending it. What do you think?
Adam Pearce is really bad at his job, and I'm not sure – and I say this as the on-air authority figure, Adam Pearce. I'm sure Adam Pearce is really good at his job backstage, but, like, they've booked him to be really bad at his job, and I don't know if that's on purpose or not. The thing, and I don't know who I saw say this, but I this wasn't my idea, but the idea that WWE refs, like, missed the shoulder up on Montez Ford at the pay-per-view, and then they missed the Usos shoulder up on, I think, on an episode of SmackDown. So because the real refs are not doing their job well enough, the solution was to bring in a ref with even less experience to do the job and expect them to do it better. Like, that seems to be the logic behind having a special guest referee in this match. And so, like, it's just from all angles, it's dumb, and it just feels like one of those segments, especially tonight, where when they were haphazardly rewriting Raw as they do every week, this was the segment they spent like the least time thinking about, because it just falls apart logically on the smallest inspection of what's going on, and it's hard to believe that it passes muster.
All right, and then finally, JB from Detroit says, do you guys think WWE's trying to do too much too soon with Theory? In the last week alone, he's had brushes with Bobby Lashley, Dolph Ziggler, AJ Styles, Madcap Moss, and he's teased cashing in on Roman Reigns and Brock Lesnar. It almost feels like WWE's trying to hurry legitimacy to Theory so that he will seem ready for a title for the theoretical cash-in at SummerSlam. In an attempt at throwing everything against the wall, I feel like Theory lacks any true focus. Do you guys think that, due to a lack of hype and a strong card, WWE feels they need to do this with Theory? I'm not saying they wouldn't have done it eventually anyway, but this feels like rapid speed booking. As always, love the show, and go VIP, everyone. Thank you, JB. So too much for Theory, or is it kind of important if they want to elevate him to have him out there interacting and messing with everybody here and, you know, I mean, sort of applaud them for, he's got the Lashley match. They're adding, you know, the Money in the Bank feature to Lesnar Reigns to give that rematch a boost. But they also seem to be setting the table for whatever comes after SummerSlam that involves Dolph Ziggler, or perhaps something happens at SummerSlam that involves Theory and Dolph Ziggler. Metcalf Moss does feel like maybe we should stop before we get there.
It certainly is more evidence to the fact that WWE does truly have big things in mind for Austin Theory. The fact that they're getting him so involved in so many different situations, and, you know, naturally as the Money in the Bank briefcase holder, he's going to have some say in segments that involve Roman Reigns and segments that involve Brock Lesnar. We'll be really curious as to what their interaction is like next week when we're on to the go-home shows, especially with Roman being there live at Madison Square Garden for Raw. So you do risk overexposure, and this is patented WWE booking. When they find someone to get behind, they're going to put them on TV as much as possible and try to give them every potential way to get over. We've seen that to the detriment of John Cena and Roman Reigns before him. So we'll see if WWE has sort of learned their lesson or see if they try that same tact with Austin Theory. But yeah, I don't think we're at a point where it truly feels like, you know, if I had to sit and think about it, that wouldn't come naturally to my mind to think that, wow, he's in all of these segments with all of these different wrestlers doing all of these different things. So until it gets to that point, at least for me personally, I don't think it's a huge issue, but that's going to change based on the person. If you see that and you see him in all these segments, you might think, hey, you know, maybe cut down on the Austin Theory love a little bit.
Greg, anything else you want to bring up from Raw?
No, I think that's about it.
Great. How can people follow you on Twitter?
You can find me at Greg M. Parks.
And you can follow me at The Wade Keller. And follow our brand on Twitter at PW Torch. And, of course, visit our website, pwtorch.com. Greg, we'll hear from you next Sunday on Wrestling Night in America. But if people haven't yet, they should check out last night's episode. Search PW Torch right now. If you haven't yet, we implore you. We encourage you. We invite you. Yeah. to subscribe if you haven't yet and check out Wrestling Night in America, part of the Daily Cast lineup. Thanks, Greg. We'll talk to you next time.
Absolutely. Thanks, Wade.
Yep. Thanks, listeners. Thanks to our on-site correspondent. Thanks to our callers. Thanks to our emailers. We'll talk to all of you hopefully soon.